Hey, it's Brian from Vintage Euro. I know, it's been a while. We have good reasons for disappearing unexpectedly, as we explain in the episode you're about to hear. And I know we said we'd be back on July 1st, and it's almost August now. There's a good reason for that, too, which should become obvious if you listen carefully to this episode. Miles and I actually recorded this 3 weeks before it finally got produced, and unfortunately, we've just had to sit on it for a while. But the important thing is, we're back, and we appreciate you sticking with us. Now, on to the first new episode in, honestly, I don't even remember how long. Just have a listen.
Welcome to the Vintage Euro Podcast, for people who love classic European cars and motorcycles, from the 1950s to the rad era. Now here are your hosts, Brian Joslin and Miles Levy.
Hey, man.
We're back.
How you doing?
Good, man.
Now that the podcast listeners can't tell, but now we actually get to look at each other. So this could be a good thing or a really bad thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
Actually, you're looking a little digitized. Now you're not looking so clear all of a sudden.
You are too, but I think that they keep the video at a low bit rate to not consume bandwidth.
It's like the soft lens on Barbra Streisand. We probably look better as a result, right?
Could be. So I look better. Funny. Yeah.
Yeah, I look better, slightly out of focus. Anyway. So, yeah. Have you been doing anything since the last time we did this? What was that? February? So.
Yeah, I was trying to remember. I think it was March. I suppose I could go back and see, but.
Yeah, it wouldn't be that hard to check, but yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, been a little busy.
A little bit. I mean, we're at an interesting thing. We're going to be able to talk about what you've been doing, and then I'm going to have to talk in circles about the things that I'm in the process of doing, but I can't really name names at this point. So, yeah.
So it was middle of February, and it is now almost middle of July. So it's been a while, to say the least.
March, April, May, June. Okay, 5 months. Almost five months. Go.
Yeah. So it wouldn't be podcasting if we didn't take an unexpected hiatus with a little warning, right? So
keep them on their toes up until they're off their toes and lying down, I guess.
Yeah. And I think we thought this would be like a month and a half, maybe. You were still out east here with us, and we were kind of waiting for you to head back. And I had a lot going on, which we'll get to here in a minute. And we thought, hey, we'll be back in the podcast swing by 1st of April or so, and here we are.
What part of me thought that I would drive to the East Coast and then just somehow easily make my way back from Philadelphia to Los Angeles with everything that was going on between the bad weather, and then I believe there was a small problem with energy in Texas, which was the southernmost route, as opposed to the 2 feet of snow falling anywhere north of that. Yeah, that might have been unrealistic. So, yes, I was working from home an awful lot, and then had a killer road trip back to the West Coast in May, which was, you know, maybe we can get to that at some point. But
yeah,
once I had my shots and Team Pfizer, side note, yeah, I wound up driving Philly to Chicago, to Road America for the RVCA Classic Vintage Races, to Friends Place in Minneapolis, cut across down to Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, and just visiting friends the entire way. It was the best way to kind of celebrate getting back into the swing of actually seeing people. So it was really cool. Yeah, yeah.
And what did that take you, 10 days or so? What was that?
I took it eight. I actually took eight days. Yeah.
Okay.
I spent a couple days in Wisconsin, and the Wisconsin, that wasn't my buddy from Minneapolis calling an audible. I was going to go from Chicago to Minneapolis, and he was like, wait a second. the vintage races are there. We have a buddy of ours, mostly a buddy of his, Alan Tom, who was campaigning an old Alpha Julia Super, 1600 Super, excuse me. And the great thing is, you know, usually if you're trying to do any kind of camping at Road America, it's already all locked in, but we showed up, got a prime corner spot infield at turn five at Road America, and watched
amazing,
an incredible stuff. We were camping out of, not exactly an RV, my Volvo S60 and an 87 911 Carrera, which was another amazing thing because he actually brought people have ever read our stuff online. My buddy Chad has a white 83 SC that's kind of outlaw style, but right. he brought his dad's 30,000 mile 87 911 Carrera that was handed down to him when his father passed away. And just seeing him roll up to Siebkins, where we agreed to meet, I wasn't expecting it. It was an incredible thrill just to see it coming. So we had a great weekend with that, and then we drove the long way back from Road America to Minnesota on all those incredible back roads in Wisconsin. So we took the long way back. That was like an 8.5 hour drive from that would have been a 4.5 hour drive if we did the straight way. But man, just a great way to get back into the swing of things in the spring with a couple of quick cars. Volvo could keep up with a 911 Carrera, it turns out, pretty well, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you're driving like Chad does when it's his dad's 30,000 miler, if he'd had his outlaw car, it would have been a different situation for sure. But he was holding back a little bit, which let the old front wheel drive sedan kind of hang on his tail for a while. So it was a blast. It was a blast.
And you made it back to the West Coast without scrubbing any front tires off.
See, when you put in brand new control arms and actually get your front wheel alignment, it turns out your tires will actually still look pretty much new on the other side.
Yeah,
I love that. The Volvo was fantastic at it. It was that whole difference. It was like, oh yeah, this car really tracks completely differently across bad tarmac and stuff like that. And I took all the side roads. I was on the interstates very, very little. It was interesting. I took out of Minneapolis, I took all of these farm roads, and there was a lot of, 90 degree turns through some of that, but there was also a surprising number of really cool curvy roads through farmland, through Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas, down into Colorado. It was one of the best days of driving by myself I ever had. It was amazing. So
lower really Iowa is actually a lot hillier than people would realize.
I agree.
Yeah. And, southern Wisconsin, the Kettle Moraine area, we know from doing events there, but right. Fantastic driving. It's, the folks in Wisconsin call the Illinois guys Flatlanders for a reason. They've got that nice terrain up there for driving.
Right. And I've pissed off more than one Wisconsinite when I say, it's relatively flat out there because, I'm comparing it to, 9,000 foot elevations of Angeles Forest, but they're like, hey, it's not flat. I'm like, you're absolutely right. In the Kettle Moraine, there's no doubt it's incredible, especially when you get up on some of the higher points and start winding your way down. It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Yeah. I have to say, I was jealous that you were at Road America, for that event, and got to go back to Siebkins. When I was in Illinois, our media association used to do an event there generally mid-May or so, just about the earliest you could really count on doing an event there without snow, right?
Sure.
Occasionally showing up. And I really miss that. That week when we were there just driving new cars, and I always took that back road. I don't know if you had a chance to do that, but the original road courses when they were run on the roads around town.
Well, that was Chad's idea to do that, which I did. So you're going from marker to marker telling you this is where the original corner was, which is super cool. Super cool. Yeah.
And totally suicidal. I mean, you think about those open cars and the trees and the fence posts on the side of the road, and it's just right there. And it was obviously deadly. I just love Road America, Elkhart Lake. It's a great place to be.
Well, you forget. And that's the thing. I haven't been in the Midwest for so long, and you forget there really is something special about that place. And I love that track. Like you and I was, we were laughing about this because I can't remember what event put me on that track right before I moved to LA. I still can't. I've been racking my brain. But that's a killer track. That's a really, and an amazing place to watch. And it was, the first, finally it was warm and in the, mid 60s with a little cloud. So it was perfect.
Perfect.
Car watching weather,
Yeah.
So what a great way. Yeah. What a great way to feel like you're coming out of this year long hibernation of the entire world,
The long, long winter.
It was definitely about a year long by my estimation. Yeah. I do want to give a shout out to all of you car enthusiasts, because I forgot what it's like dealing with cars that have to deal on salted roads. Because it already drove me nuts. Like I said, I have brand new suspension components on my car, and the amount of corrosion I already see on those from 2 months, 2 months of driving it through the roads of Philadelphia, where they, you know, they pre-salt and they put all that, whatever that greenish blue stuff is. So they're trying to make the roads better. I'm spoiled, and I'm not ashamed to admit it. I hate it. I hate it. I've spent so much time cleaning up under there just because I refuse to have to deal with that. So
and we didn't have a harsh winter. It's just a little, you know, it's the pre-treatments and, you know, the stuff that lingers that really makes the winters tough.
No, it's not the snow itself. I mean, you don't see cars like this don't look like that down in Denver or anywhere like down there. But then I'm up in Minnesota, and it's just every car is like, if the car is more than 10 years old, there's like a rust in the middle of a door panel where you're just like, oh, you forget how bad it really is for cars and why everybody has a winter beater. So
exactly.
So much good driving. I was down near Pikes Peak, and then, you know, once you get into Colorado and all those roads through those incredible vistas down into New Mexico, especially for us East Coast, I mean, it looks so alien, and you do really appreciate how much different it is. So good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't remember where we left off when you were out here. We were working on your Range Rover Sport.
The Range Rover.
And I think we kind of we got through most of its problems, but not before we dropped off the podcast waves for a while, right? I think we were still working through that in February and March.
Well, I have to say the Range Rover actually, you know, it had a bunch of little issues, all of which are actually solved. Mostly. And except there's the one problem that's left, which I thought was just an ABS wheel sensor. It kept on throwing a steering fault, which completely disables all the traction aid. So
four of them, didn't we?
Yeah, well, we did, because they all looked looked bad. So it cleaned out. No, I mean, the underside of the car looked like, again, like we were just talking about, it looked like a car that spent 16 years in the Northeast. But of course, when I finally broke down and bought an OBD2 reader, because mine was out in California, and I was like, oh, I'll just get a cheapy $40 one out here. It tells me it's the steering angle sensor's gone. if we had taken care of that first, which was tougher than replacing a wheel sensor, but still not the worst job in the world, then we probably would have solved the main problem. But having said that, every other little problem with that you and I went through, from sunroof drains and discovering one of the wiring harness that runs along the door panel was sitting in a small pond.
The Rio Grande.
The Rio Rover, I guess. So the car's in great shape. Having said that, it's been so hectic as I've gotten back here that we're just finally now getting around to like, hey, we got to actually ship the thing west. So it's been sitting in your driveway off to the side of your house, gathering moss, as it were. So you said it had a little weird issue with the transmission, because that they're kind of known
for. Yeah,
not the actual mechanics of it, but the shifter cables,
just a shift linkage a little sticky, probably from lack of use, but also seems to be a common problem with those. So
We'll see.
Yeah, my house meanwhile is looking like a used Land Rover lot, because I picked up another another vehicle.
You did.
A really sweet one.
Well, yeah, and you know, you had an 04 Range Rover, and then your 92 05, classic.
Yeah.
And the
05 and a 93, yep.
Oh, so I was close. Wrong years. But yeah, so in addition to those two and my Range Rover Sport, you went ahead and got another one that you could not – you couldn't afford to pass up, I kind of say, actually. So what do you want to talk about that one?
Well, I mean, I wasn't looking to replace the L322, the Range Rover. But buddy of mine down in Georgia, Sean, good buddy of mine from high school, was selling his LR3. He made a kind of a blind post on Facebook that he was thinking of putting this thing up for sale. And he just started fielding offers right away. And he's got four kids, and half of them drive now, so he doesn't need a seven-passenger vehicle, and they're kind of rearranging their fleet as they approach empty nester status. And,
gotcha.
And so I, you know, I threw him an offer based on what he told me the last guy had offered him, and we just kind of made a deal. So got it trucked up here. I'm embarrassed to admit what I paid for it, so I'm not going to, but it was cheap, but it needed a little bit of attention. I've put a couple grand into work, just got ball joints done and paid somebody to do that. I wasn't even attempting that on my own.
well, we did that on yours on the L322. Yeah,
these are buried up high, and apparently they're a nightmare. So it was worth the 4 hours of labor I paid for squeezing out 15-year-old ball joints or whatever was on there.
Okay. Solid advice, because my car is probably going to – there's a little bit of a rattle from the left front, and that's the same setup. So
there's several rattles, but you'll find that out. Yeah, it's after driving the two back to back, yours definitely is going to need some more suspension work. I can tell you that.
But, okay, fair enough.
So anyway, yeah, it's a 2006 LR3 in the dark green in the I'm drawing a blank on the name of the green now, but gorgeous car, immaculate. You'd never know he had four kids. It was really well kept. And so that's my reliable daily car. I put a suspension air compressor in it, done a couple of, minor maintenance things, and it's been trustworthy. So haven't gotten rid of the Range Rover yet. It's on the list of things to do. As Kelly reminds me, it's still sitting in the driveway. So, and of course, I've been waiting to move the 93 off site, but I guess that leads into the bigger story of why.
Well, yeah. Why?
To go.
But let me set the stage. So that 93 actually has most of all of the parts pulled out of the interior and is certainly not in a drivable state. No. And so it needs a little bit of attention, but apparently
needs
a lot of attention, but that's because it's going to someplace that you are familiar with. Yes, Brian. So why don't you explain that?
So last fall, this goes way back. So we started doing the podcast last summer and in the midst of the pandemic, and started doing our events in the fall as things were starting to lighten up. And we were kind of moving forward with plans to develop Vintage Euro into a little bigger property. And a friend of mine called me in, I think it was right after Thanksgiving, end of November, early December last year, and said, "Hey, I'm looking at buying a business, and I think it'd be a good one for you to help me run. Would you be interested in taking a look at it?" And, this friend is out of the country right now. He's living in Denmark. And so he said, I need eyes on the ground. I think it's a pretty neat business. And so he starts telling me about it. And right away, I knew exactly what it was. It was a restoration business, local restoration business that I was actually looking at office space directly across the street for the magazine at one point. Right. it's two businesses in one, effectively. The business is Ragtops and Roadsters. It's a British car specialist. They do restoration and maintenance work. And years ago, they also acquired another restoration business called Pollock Auto Restoration in Pottstown. And of course, I've got a connection to Pottstown through my time at Eastwood Company. And Pottstown, Pollock was better known for doing American car restorations. But right now, the lines were a little blurry. They were, it was no longer strictly British cars at Ragtops. They were doing Mercedes and Alfa Romeos and all kinds of other stuff. And then, up at Pollock, they're doing half the cars up there are E-types anyway. So it's the boundaries are a little fluid. But anyway, I was familiar with both businesses and had been to open houses at Ragtops. And so right away, I knew exactly what it was. And so I said, yeah, I'll go out and check out. And I signed my non-disclosure. I was still working for Dorman at the time, obviously. And went out and checked it out and kind of gave it an assessment. And we built a business plan and started negotiating with the current seller or the current owner who was selling the business to retire. He's in his mid-60s, just wants to retire.
Right. And, he decided it was time. Right.
Decided it was time. He's had the business for 30 years. He'd like to spend some weekends with his family. So so basically since early December, I think December 9th was the day I first went out and visited the buildings the first time. You know, we've been building this plan, looking at books and looking at, when I say books, the accounting, you know, the business end of the book, that stuff, and right. trying to make sense of how we can keep it running in the first place, grow it, evolve it, and where there's opportunities for our own interest as we move forward with it. So so that was all cruising along. And then right about February, it started getting really intense. There was a lot going on. I had my day job still, was spending a lot of time with this project, the Ragtops project, was winding down, closing down the business with Alloy and Grit, my Land Rover magazine, and trying to squeeze in time for everything we were doing with the podcast and everything. And that's when I said, we've got to kind of take a break. I don't have enough hours in the week, and some things were getting pretty tight or pretty intense with the Ragtops deal. We thought we were going to, I think we put in an offer in late February or early March to buy the business. And we thought by April 1, maybe April 15th, we'd be in the
right.
door.
Right. that size says it all. Not quite.
As you know, we've been waiting to close on the business for, you know, ever since then. And the closing date's always been like another couple weeks. You know, without going into too many details, we were buying the buildings as well as the business operation. And the two buildings are 100-year-old industrial, you know, buildings. And lots of stuff has happened on those properties over time. And perhaps not surprisingly, they didn't exactly fly through their environmental inspections. So
a couple of questions. Yeah.
Couple questions here. Yeah. So, so, you know, that really derailed the whole transaction. We'd pretty much made all the other agreements, you know, in terms of what we were requiring and values and stuff. But, you know, the buildings required attention, and they still do. And that was the holdup. So it totally derailed everything. We ended up rearranging the transaction to work around that in the short term. And we may be buying the buildings later and you know, after things are corrected. Well, so.
Right. Now, that was really the main thrust of what was kind of holding everything up, was it went from everything's being purchased as a unit to somebody's got to figure out the mitigation. Somebody's got to figure out what's clean and what's not. Who's going to pay for that? Who's going to hold on to that? That all of a sudden changes every aspect of the contract for sale. So there you go. 1 minute is April, the next minute is July. And now it seems like, okay, that all worked out the way it was supposed to, but boy, that felt really touch and go there for a while. Right.
Yep. Yeah. So today we're recording on July 6th. And as of this moment, we still don't have a closing date, but we're anticipating it's still going to happen this week, as we've been anticipating for the last month and a half that it will happen this week.
And if this podcast gets released, it's because everything's okay, because we didn't have to completely ditch this podcast or record another much more bitter version of what we were doing, right?
Exactly. So throughout all this, things got pretty intense. As we got deeper into this, I left my job at Dorman. Some might say prematurely, but you know, in advance of what I knew was coming. When I did leave, I anticipated probably 2 weeks, you know, of downtime between jobs. Was hoping for at least a week, and it's been a month and a half at this point. So it's
so you got what you wanted and then some, right?
Yeah. But I've been doing it without pay and everything. It's basically still spending time preparing for this. Our biggest concern in all this is that we had about, you know, 24 employees, give or take, between the two buildings. And we didn't want them to find out about it until we were ready to communicate, you know, exactly what was happening, because we didn't know how long the transaction would take. And so we didn't want them knowing that the business was up for sale and wondering about their jobs until we were ready to talk about what the future would bring. And as it turned out, I left my job. I think it was the 23rd of May, if I remember correctly. It was a Friday. And the following Monday, I got a call from the seller saying they found out. They found the business listing online and they know it's for sale and they're asking me what's going on. And I don't know what to tell them. And I said, let's have a meeting tomorrow and we'll just tell them everything. And that's right. What we did. So my early departure worked out in my favor, because if I was at Dorman sweating bullets over this, you know, and not able to act on it, it would have been a lot worse. But so, you know, for the past month and a half, they've known that, you know, that the business is transitioning. It's actually been a good thing. We just didn't want them reading about it or hearing about it from a customer or somewhere else,
Right.
It's given me time to get in the door a little bit and do a little bit of pre-planning and talk with techs and the business operations people and understand exactly how this works. Worst case scenario, I would have had maybe 2 days between jobs, and I can tell you there's so much to absorb. I wouldn't have been able to really, you know, hit the ground running.
That wouldn't have been ideal. No.
So now I've had the luxury of going into each location, you know, 1 or 2 days a week to kind of get a grasp of what's going on. And now we're just waiting. So as we've been doing. But the folks, the staff seem to have built a comfort level with me. And so I think we're going to do some good stuff going forward. So.
Well, listen, that's always something that you've like had a real affinity for. So I think, yeah that's going to be a great basis for everything that we're trying to do. And in addition to having a great gig going where you're involved, you got your hands right on all these great old European cars and getting them in better shape. So it'll be fun.
So yeah, my role will be as managing director. So I won't be actually working on cars. I'll be managing the management staff, effectively stepping in for the outgoing owner, but without the financial obligation of that. Just a hired hand. So that's not true. But
very modest. But yeah, not quite true. Not quite true.
Yeah, not quite true. But it'll introduce me to so many more new owners, a new circle of people that I wouldn't have easily had access to, you know, and vehicles. You know, they've got that history. There's so many good cars that have passed through their doors. Right. So, I am very much looking forward to getting started here.
Now, you said, you said you would talk to the employees. Have you had any of the owners of some of these older projects contact you or try and touch base with you about anything that's been going on at this point?
Not really, because we haven't officially communicated to the customers yet until the deal closes. So as of this point, you know, we haven't. People know. I won't pretend that people don't know, but but we haven't formally communicated. So we've not invited that kind of response yet. I have been at several events in the last few weeks. You know, with the sales staff, and I've been introduced to clients as I'm at the shop, and they're aware of what's coming. You know, the ones that have projects in the shop at the moment, for the most part, know that there'll be some transition coming, but you know, we haven't broadcast it at this point. So
gotcha.
Yep.
Well, that ought to be interesting. I'll be looking forward to those stories, at least the parts you can tell me about how everything kind of transitions, because that ought to be interesting. And for the West. So.
And so that puts me in a position of having a place to work on my Range Rover finally.
to bring it full circle, that's where this old British car is going, where it belongs, where it can be put back.
So I guess I could talk about the buildings a little bit. The two facilities are kind of gems in their own way. The one in Perkasie, which I took you by when you were here, is a 6,000 square foot building, and that's kind of, you know, it's got a nice street level showroom space and, you know, basement workshop. So that's where the car will probably live in the short term. But eventually it's going to have to go up to Pottstown, which is a 26,000 square foot factory. And they've got paint and upholstery and all kinds of fabrication capabilities there. So at some point, we know that body's going to need a ton of welding. You saw it.
Yes. It needs things that are in place where you can actually weld.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah.
So, I'll continue the disassembly in my whatever spare time I have, as I take on this monster of a business. But at least I'll have a place to get it off site and at some point under a roof and begin to go at it wholehearted. So
nice.
Yeah. And hopefully some other, maybe we can sneak in some other projects down the road as well. So
given a chance, I'm sure we will. That pretty much sums up everything you've been doing pretty nicely, actually, so far. So
yeah. Writing business plans, meeting new employees that may or may not like me and just doing the waiting game.
Boy, that's always going to be interesting, obviously, because this is a change that clearly nobody was anticipating. So there's going to be that natural kind of there's going to be a feeling out period. So
Sure.
So take nothing personally. Keep moving. Right.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I did have to do a sales job, to show them
that you're doing
not green
on some level.
I've been around this business. Right. Yeah. And painted the background and where I came from. And so I seem to have built some level of rapport right off the bat. And, the more I'm in there, they understand I'm a hands-on guy, which matters a lot, obviously.
Sure.
A lot of people can come in and tell them what to do, but if they've never done it themselves, it's tougher ask.
That's true in any business, I think. They have to believe that you know what you're talking about and it's not just theoretical. So that is good. So that'll keep you locked down on the East Coast for a while. No West Coast trips anytime in the near future for you.
No. A fair number of fall events. I mean, naturally we'll do Radnor Hunt, which is in our backyard. Be going to the Audrains Concours and get a couple others. I don't know that we'll show anything down in South Carolina. Hilton Head Island.
But
we'll probably be there to scope that out. And of course, looking forward to Amelia next year, which is now owned by Haggerty.
they are that? Really coming around. Yeah. I'm all for it. They really seem to be doing a lot in our space. So, and quality. So let's see what happens with that show. I wouldn't imagine it'll be much different. So, we'll have to see. In the meantime, should we talk a little bit about what I'm doing just to kind of try and bring it full circle? This is going to be interesting because what's happened is, the pandemic gives you
so much
to think.
So much changed over our hiatus, right? I mean, it's a new world.
Well, right. And I've been in the restaurant business for a long time, but as I started doing some writing for Vintagero and then started taking on some other ideas, it's just one of those situations in life where you start saying, let me just say yes to everything that is a possibility for the writing space. And, there's been a lot of fits and starts and nothing really going yet, but the funny thing is, unlike you, I cannot talk about anything yet because none of these are set in stone, but it looks like starting next week, I've got potentially four different very unique writing gigs that should be all going at once that I can start talking about and we'll freely talk about here because obviously it's also free advertising for that. What that meant was I had to have that honest talk with myself about whether or not I was going to stay in the restaurant business because that, as we speak, is July 6th. The restaurant company that I work for is having the grand opening for all of their businesses tomorrow. We're in California. They completely shut down and now they are completely opening tomorrow. And I'm going to be at the grand opening for one of them, the legendary El Carmen on 3rd Street, which has existed since the 1920s. And I want to make sure I'm there for when everyone gets back to work and when the customers come back. But that's the only day I'm doing.
Yeah.
Because I had to have honest assessment of I can't lock down into this and also do all these other things realistically because I can't. Restaurant jobs, you're either there or not. So yeah. I did that scary. I didn't dislike the place. I still like all the people, but I had to be like, this, it's time. It's time. If I'm really going to be serious about all this stuff, and everything that I'm working on feeds off of each other. Like, this kind of makes sense. What we're doing, the thing I'm doing with these different sites and with these different potential catalogs. So, coming into the writing thing a little bit later than some, but better late than never. So, we'll talk about it as it goes along, but what that means is I've got all the time in the world to bother you and do podcasts. So that's good. So I can call you whenever I've got something. Yeah. And, a lot of it means I just have to have my laptop with me, so I can just hang out at your desk and bother you about stuff while you're trying to get some stuff done. Does that sound like a good idea?
That sounds like a good idea. Yeah. Hopefully, the next time we record, I'll be in, I'm going to move the podcasting setup to one of my offices in the new arrangement. I'm going to have an office at both buildings. So.
Oh, one of my offices. Oh, look at you.
I'll send you pictures. Okay. It's pretty gritty. We'll make it my own space eventually. I think it's going to make sense to record there in the off hours and it's the right environment to, it's the right setting for what we're going to continue to talk about. So
for sure.
Yeah.
But I now have, the kind of work that means, as long as I have my laptop with me, I can work. Yeah. So that, and that's important to me because a lot of the reasons I was on the East Coast is because I really wasn't a big fan of not seeing my family during the holidays. And we're all at that point. Our parents are getting older. Those of us are still lucky enough to have them. So I want to make sure I can get out there and see them and not tell them I can't because I can't possibly, leave the floor of a restaurant or the offices. So we're making the right moves. We'll see where they end up. Everything may crash and burn. And, I already had that talk with the El Carmen people. It's like, well, if everything goes horribly wrong all at once, can I come back? And they said, yeah. So it's nice to have that support. But, there's no reason for me to think that's going to happen. I think we're doing okay. So,
yeah,
so that's good. That quickly sums up what I have going on. It's at this point, actually, it's the thing I've had a lot of friends. We're just trying to figure out what proper vintage Euro car we have. I've got the Volvo, the Range Rover will get out here, but, we got to find me something with a manual and a rear wheel drive to play with. So
I'm in the same boat and the prospects are limitless in some ways. We've talked about, some project cars that we may build on spec, for the company, as marketing, vehicles, no pun intended, to promote the capabilities we have and, can't really spoil anything there yet, but, the idea of a small British car has a ton of appeal to me. I think I told you, irrespective of what we're going to do with the company projects, that I think I'm going to need to own a Mini.
You did tell me that.
A relatively
recent development, but you did absolutely share that with me. So that's the one, huh?
Well, in the short term, they're around. Let's just say there's several around that may be approachable. And I think I told you there's only 12 pieces in that Lego kit. So it should be a fairly simple one to get on the road if it's not already roadworthy and have a little fun with it and see what else comes next. The Martini 924 that I was stalking has disappeared. So I'm assuming the guy came and paid his bill or the crazy old German guy put it inside, thinks it's worth $1 million or something. I don't know. So that one's out. My daughter thinks I'm crazy for wanting a Mercedes 123 wagon, but
right.
Doesn't matter.
Right. Well, she is crazy, but that crazy isn't going anywhere anytime soon. I don't. But again, I'm still looking at the same thing. It's still 124s and 126 Mercedes. If I'm going to stick with an automatic, but thanks to our boy Tim. Shout out Tim McNair, GP Concours, who pretty reliably sends me something interesting, and then also with if you don't buy this, you suck, or some message to that general effect. He did clue me in on
so aggressive.
Yeah. He's very in your face. So Philly. But to be honest, it's some of the cheaper Porsches. I mean, you know, we're not talking about it much in the air cooled arena. But there's a couple of things he sent me that, again, I won't talk about them because we're not talking about anything until it's in our grubby hands. But he got a lot in a couple of interesting cars where I could maybe get at it before it becomes available to the public. And there might be something really interesting and in the wheelhouse that we could talk about.
Cool.
Nothing particularly fast, but just, you know, it's funny as almost everyone I know when I was running around in a really fast car and all the people I know that are running around in fast cars, everybody seems to be going back to that more feel, less outright power. And yeah. I don't think that's a niche particularly. I think that's what, especially as we have all these electric cars that, you know, now we have a 1,000 horsepower sedans that are immediately available. Can we get to that point? Because that's where I feel. I don't know about you. It can't be about the speed anymore, because if it's about the speed,
no,
you're wasting your time if you're not getting one of these electric super things, which is going to smoke almost anything you have that has an internal combustion motor. So that's where I'm at. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Analog's where it's at, whether it's fast or not. Right.
Well, as long as it feels fast. Yeah, I guess that was a side thing. We won't talk too much about it. We'll save it for the next one when I have some more stuff. But there's a auction company out here named Stratus Auctions. Mm. And I got to drive a couple of vintage Euro cars. One of them was ridiculously fast. It's the Roof RSR, which has 700 horsepower. That's definitely worth its own. Yeah. These will be definitely worth its own. But the Lancia Stratos, which is both rare and amazing, 190 horsepower, dogleg manual transmission, not particularly fast, all the most amazing noises and feels in the world. That's all, and you never stop laughing, and that was really telling because that was a very valuable car, and I'm driving through the middle of Los Angeles. So by all rights, I should have been tiptoeing around it. It couldn't happen because the car was just too great. But again, we'll talk about that. We can go further down the line with that, but, it's what we talk about in love, right?
Yep. So similarly, I've been able to use, one of the cars that belongs to my business partner on the, Ragtops and Roadsters deal. He's got a few little toys, and I won't get into too many details, but as long as we're talking Lancias,
yes,
I was able to get out. So not this past weekend, but Father's Day weekend. It was the last weekend in June. We did our first Vintage Euro United gathering here. I would have liked to have done them earlier in the year, but like everything else has been on hold until I figure out what's going on with the, you know, with the Ragtops deal. So finally just had to pull the trigger, and, you know, people were asking if we were going to do events again. And so I didn't want to conflict with Father's Day weekend, but popped one in the last weekend in June, and then put four dates, third Sunday of the month, for the rest of summer, you know, through October. Where I'm going with that is I was able to borrow the Lancia Delta Integrale Evo 1 from my partner to take to Vintage Euro, where Tim showed up with his little Lancia as well.
a couple of magics. He's a 16 valve.
Yeah, but you know.
But it's
still
not
good. Still good.
Look at you getting all high and mighty. That's really funny. Your first drive in one of those was Tim's slightly modified Delta Integrale 16 valve, but so you had a basic feel for it, but then you actually got the red one. Is the red one's gorgeous. Yeah, your partner's car is gorgeous. Yeah. Really. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought the text between us was appropriate. He asked how things were going.
You just sent a picture of you behind the wheel of the car. Yeah. That definitely was worth more than 1,000 words of text. So
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It was easier while I was driving. But, I was able to to run that one to the Vintage Euro in the morning, Vintage Euro United show in the morning, and then bolted right from that to Cult Classic, which is the show from Josh Pashaus.
Right.
I never know how to say his last name. From Nothing Leaves Stock. And it was a great reminder. I ran into George Acorn and Bill Cho from Audi Club, and one of my colleagues from Volkswagen of America was there. So it was a great gathering. It's predominantly Volkswagen tuner centric. That's Josh, his niche, but there was a lot of other vintage Euro stuff there as well. And not a lot of like top shelf merchandise, but it was proof that the scene is still very much alive, that young people are still very interested in doing things with their cars. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of creativity on the scene. I'll have to shoot you a picture. Someone had redone a Mark II Golf, an early one with the fixed vent window. So like 87, in a Cami X1 full body kit. And he had found everything to reproduce it, had the car repainted, had all the decals redone, Recaros on the inside, the whole deal. It was actually pretty cool. And he was not our age. I'll put it that way. He was a lot younger guy than I would have expected to have any context on a Cami X1, GTI. So it was good to see that the scene is still there. George and I were talking about it a little bit, said, can't jump back into it the way the guys are doing it right now. It's not where I'm at right now. But it's great to see that it hasn't withered and gone away. The enthusiasm for these cars is still there.
Well, that's pretty stunning. A Cami kit. I mean, you really to find that in one piece is amazing enough, but that he would actually bother to do that. I mean, all that stuff that you just don't see anymore because it didn't last, like an Edinger kit or a Nothel or any of that stuff.
I saw a Nothel intake manifold on a car at the same show. It was like,
that's nuts.
When have I seen one of those last?
And so that was so interesting. This past weekend, I went to there's this upscale boutique car culture place called Period Correct that's been out of Orange County, but they had their grand opening of their LA area boutique in Playa Vista. And granted, there was plenty of the lineup of Ferraris was hilarious. Like the 488, there was a line of like 8 488s. there was a 964 that was dumped on air. It looked particularly California. But in the parking lot, the number of E36 BMWs, which are at their lowest value, that were in incredible shape and incredible detail. The number of really cool, the Japanese imports that were from that era, the Acuras, the Hondas, the GTIs, they were there. They were all there, and they looked really, really good, and they looked like somebody knew what they were doing. They were not overdone. They were exactly the kind of things we are always talking about back in the day. So they are there. They are there, those kids. And they all look younger. And a couple of and the E30s too. But it's funny, the E30s at this point, they seem to be worth so much that they seem to be more the show queens.
Yeah.
They're
on the rebound.
The E36s, on the other hand, tend to be immaculate, but had a little bit more of that sense that they were actually being used, they had functional upgrades as opposed to strictly show, air ride, or whatever. So really cool. So it's they are definitely still happening, so it's fun to see. So and who knows, you and I can end up, I could still end up with a Mark II 16 valve GTI with a little bit of work and be pretty happy with it at this point, because it's not just nostalgia. It's like, these things are, I forgot how fun these are. So we'll see.
I can enjoy one of those again for a while.
Yeah, I know. Sure. We've talked about that. That seems to be more my thing than yours. But I mean, if you're going to have a Mini, you don't, then you're going to be set. So
I just want something a little different. If I had 7 Golfs, so I've had the Golf experience, the GTI experience.
Right.
I haven't owned a Mini, and I think it'd be fun, for a season or so.
Yeah,
to have
sure.
It. But.
As a project.
We'll see.
So, well, there you go. Well, anything else that we should bring up at the return of our podcast here?
No, I mean, I think right now it just feels good to be back in the seat and doing it again, and look forward to staying on track and having a lot more to talk about here in the coming weeks and months as we get in the door.
Well, so. Yeah, I bet you will. I mean, that's both on your end and my end. I think next week there'll be still a ton more of information, a very dense amount of information we'll try and have to parse out. We're going to be interviewing some people out here. I definitely, I'm broadcasting from the motoring club in Marina Del Rey. Still great to be back here, but we're going to be talking at some point to Michael Rapetti, because we really, there's been so much going on. So many people got so much stuff done in the pandemic that we need to kind of catch up with and put in a proper context for our listeners. So it'll be good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Well, very good. Maybe at some point here we'll do the whole video thing if we get our shit sorted out a little bit and maybe flip it to a video podcast at some point too.
Do we? I don't know if we really need to have all our people see us, but we'll see what that does to the numbers, if they go up or way down. But it can be fun. We'll just have to make sure there's interesting stuff in the background. So something like that.
Yeah, I'll have to get my office cooled up a little bit, get the old paneling off the wall and get the brick exposed and stuff like that. So we'll see. No promises.
One of the cars in the shop in the background couldn't hurt.
Yeah. Unfortunately, no one will be able to smell like the gasoline and oil and everything that emanates from the wood floors in there. It's definitely a cool experience being in those buildings. So
sweet.
So, hey, good to be talking to you again. We'll wrap it up for this episode and we'll hit our stride here again in the coming weeks as we get back on and back in the swing.
Yes. Hopefully this podcast popping up, for the subscribers will be a nice, happy surprise. if they weren't aware of it from the social media posts. But if you're still here, hello and welcome again, and hope to bring you some interesting content coming soon.
We promise to give you more heads up if we ever go on hiatus, and we promise not to make it a 5-month hiatus.
Everything's fine. We're good. Everything's on. Yep. Copacetic.
All right, man. Well, we'll talk next week and talk to you then.
Well, yeah.
See, I still don't know how to sign off. I'm way rusty on the sign off.
You're going to have to do like some kind of signature there, Doc. Yes. Look, hey, good to talk to you. Great to be back, and look forward to talking to you next week.
Yep. All right. Goodbye from the East Coast.
All right. Later from Belle Del Rey. Yeah.
All right. All right. Take it easy, man.
Later.